Bruchim Abayim to another week of Parsha Insights. We say the Shir L'Zecher Nishmas U'Le'ili Nishmas. Rebecca Bas Serina and Leon Ben Rachel, may their Neshama Tayrus have a lichtige, lichtige Gan Eden. Although the Heichel is set up differently, I could still welcome all those in the Heichel, those who are hearing it live as we give it, and those who will hear when it's sent out, Bezus Hashem. Parsha Insights to Parshas Miketz, Bezus Hashem, our goal will be, obviously, to speak about Miketz, additionally Chanukah, we're in the middle of Chanukah, Tovshin Peivov, and we have to realize that we have a few days of Chanukah, meaning the 7th and 8th day, which is already next week, which will be the week of Parshas Vayigash. So the game plan for Ezra Hashem will be to come up with one theme and to tie all three together, Chanukah, Parshas Miketz, which is this week's, and Parshas Vayigash, which will be for the end of Chanukah. Before we actually begin Parsha Insights, and I'm so grateful to people who came, especially during Chanukah, obviously very, very, very heavy on our hearts is the horrific massacre that happened a couple of days ago in Australia. I want to say this year we should all have in mind the Kedoshim, those who were murdered, Hashem Yimkom Damam. I want to say this year, and I ask the Olam, especially those who are listening, will hear when it's sent out, to please have in mind all of the neshamas of those Kedoshim. This year should be Le'ili Nishmasam. Additionally, for those who are wounded, let the year serve as a schos for the Refuah Shalema. And may Klal Yisrael Taka Bizoicha to unite with the Geula Shalema. Before actually beginning, the three things we said we're going to tie together, I want to point out something. Now, at first, to be honest, when I say it, if you raised an eyebrow, and I'll even give you the reason why you might want to raise an eyebrow, but I'll tell you why you shouldn't. So I realize that was an interesting introduction, but allow me to explain. There's a very famous, and it really does have to do with our topic tonight, there's a very famous numerical equation tying in Parshas Miketz, which is this week's Parsha, and Chanukah. Keep in mind, by the way, almost always we have Miketz the week of Chanukah, and this is one of the prime reasons given. If you open up a Chumash, that's why I borrowed yours, and you look at the end of a Parsha, it will always tell you how many psukim are in that parsha. There's one exception. Parshas Miketz, if you take a look, not only does it tell you how many psukim, but it also tells you how many words are in the parsha. It's the only parsha that it does that. And it tells you that there are 2,025 words. Why is that? Why is this the only exception where additional to Pasuk, it also tells you there are 2,025 words? So the B'nai Yisachar famously tells us beautifully because since it's always coinciding with Hanukkah, 2,025 has a tremendous, tremendous relevance to Hanukkah. Why? Because really at the minimum, every person should light one ner a night. We add each night, but on a minimum, one can get away with lighting one per night. Ner, Nun Resh, has the exact gematria of 250. Now, if you're lighting a Ner every night, and there's 8 nights of Chanukah, 8 times 250 is 2,000. And, of course, Chanukah happens and occurs on the 25th of Kislev. So the B'nai Yisachar famously tells us that that's why, since Miketz coincides with Chanukah, that's why we're told that how many words are in Parshas Miketz? Exactly 2,025 words in Miketz. And what's the relevancy for Chanukah, as we just said? Because every night you light a Ner, Ner is 250, times 8 is 2,000, plus it's the 25th of Kislev, 2,025, the exact number of words in Parshas Miketz. It's fascinating, absolutely fascinating. I'm sure in previous years we've mentioned this B'nai Yisachar, but you know what jumped at me? While exactly, I see your hand motion, you nailed it. While every year this B'nai Yisrael is incredible, but in the secular year, we are now celebrating Chanukah, of course, in Tashrin Pei Vav, but in the secular year, it's the year 2025. Now, before you raise an eyebrow and say, but we don't go with the secular year, I get it. I really do. And that's why I said already a few times it's Chanukah, Tashrin Pei Vav. But it is extraordinary, and I do mention the secular year because it's very much what the Greeks wanted to do. The Greeks wanted us to follow one lifestyle, and we, of course, don't. So I'm deliberately mentioning, yes, the secular year this year is 2025. How amazing is it that always the B'nai Yisrael is incredibly apropos, but specifically this year, because we're in the year 2025. Now, with that introduction of what the Yevonim always seek to do to us in every generation, including now, Tashrin Pei Vav, 2025. A number of years ago, we mentioned an extraordinary pshat from Reb Zev Lev Shlita. And although we mentioned it a few years ago, I want to mention it again quickly because I think it ties into the things we're going to bring out tonight, and that is the whole idea of Yavon was the physical, the external, the outside beauty, no pnimius, nothing internal, no neshama. So he said so beautifully that's very indicative with the letters of Yavon. Yavon is spelled Yud Vav and then an En Nun. Those are the only three letters in the Aleph Beis that have no pnimius, no inner airspace. I'll show you in the Heichel, if you watch my fingers and I cross it like this to make an Aleph, there's inner airspace. If I make a Salah, there's certainly inner airspace. If I make a Ches, there's inner airspace. Every letter has some pnimius inner airspace. The only three that have absolutely no pnimius, no inside space, is the Yud, and the Vav, and the En Nun. Because that's what Yavan is. Only the external. Only the physical. No pnimius, no neshama. And by the way, it should be noted that really, the Yud, Vav, Nun, it's very much the same letter. Yud is the small letter. Vav is just elongating the Yud a little bit. And the End Nun is bringing down the Vav even a bit further. And that's the way they really do it. Yud, they start small, and once they feel they've grabbed you, they stretch it further to the Vav, to the End Nun, and Nun, of course, stands for the word Nefila. And that's very much how sometimes Yavon is successful with the downfall of someone in Klal Yisroel, starting small, elongating, and then the Nun, which is the Fila. But again, Rabbi Yisai, as he points out so beautifully, the only three letters that have no pnimius. I must mention, earlier this week, we said over from the Sifrei Chaim, Reb Chaim Friedlander, says something incredible, so powerful. I think we said it at the end of Saita, before we were Zeichet to make our Siyum. Yes, you find multiple Gemaras that speak so negatively about Yavon, about Greek knowledge, the language, etc. However, if you take a look at the end of the Gemara in Saita, you find a number of Gemaras that speak very highly about the Greek language, Greek knowledge. One Gemara speaks out that there were 1,000 students that were learning, 500 were learning one subject, 500 were learning a Greek subject. So you have a number of Gemaras that still, you have to wonder, it's a blessing or a curse? It's good or it's bad? Which is it? If you're not going to talk about that Chanukah, what are you going to talk about it? So before I give you the answer of the Sifrei Chaim, I want to interject the famous pshat from the Vilna Gaon. Actually, now that I think about it, I mentioned it Friday night in shul. As I was saying it, I said, you know, it sounds familiar even to me. I said it Friday night to the men during davening. I said this pshat. So let me tell you what the Vilna Gaon says very quickly before we go back to the Sifrei Chaim. Friday night you sing Eishes Chayil. It comes to the letter Shin towards the end of the Eishes Chayil. Sheker Achein VeHevel HaYaisi. Sheker hachein, chein, charm is false, it's nothing. Hevel hayefi, beauty is hevel, it's meaningless, it's nothing, it's terrible. Isha yiras Hashem, he tisal. The only thing that's praiseworthy is fear of Hashem. The Vilna Gaon asks a question, how can we say such a blanket statement that Chaim and Yaifi are nothing, they're Sheker, they're Hevel, nothing at all? Don't we have many Gemaras that speak about beautiful people? These are the most beautiful people in the world, people who possessed extraordinary beauty, extraordinary Chaim. So you see, it is something we speak positively about, so how can we now go ahead and make a comment? It's Hevel and it's Sheker. Good Kasha? Good Kasha? The Vilna Gaon says you have to read the pasuk differently. If all a person possesses, I'm going to stress that again. If all a person possesses is chein and yaifi, the external sheker hachein, the hevel hayaifi, it's false, it's vain, it's meaningless, it's corrupt. Isha yiras Hashem, but if a woman possesses that beautiful quality of yiras Hashem, He tis halal doesn't merely mean she is praiseworthy. He goes back on those qualities of Yaifi and Chain. Then those qualities become praiseworthy. Those qualities are only frowned upon when that's all you have. When it's only the external, it's only the beauty. You use none of it, l'avodas habayri, to serve Hashem. If that's all you have is chein and yaifi, sheker, hevel, nothing. But isha yiras Hashem, when a woman possesses the quality of yiras Hashem, ki tishalo, then those qualities of chein and yaifi, they become so praiseworthy. They become so beautiful because they're inculcated in someone who's permeated and saturated with Yirach Hashem. Mayridika pshat from the Vilna Gaon. So yes, Yaifi and Chain are very praiseworthy when they're found in a person whose DNA is Yirach Hashem. That's the concept that Rav Chaim Friedlander uses to ask our question. Blessing or curse? Good or bad? Positive or negative? I mean, like, hello, we have to talk about Yovel. Now it's Chanukah. So he references the pasuk where it speaks about Yaftelukim liyefes. Yefes is, of course, the beginning of Yavon. Rabbi Say, how does that pasuk end? Yaftelukim liyefes. Yefes, Yavon is beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. You know how that pasuk ends? The yishkoim b'oyalei shame. Yaftelukim liyefes. Yefes, Yavon is only beautiful if the yishkoim b'oyalei shame is used to further the tenets of Torah. It's used to become a bigger Talmud Chacham. It's used to become a better tzaddik. Yaftelukim liyefes is only praiseworthy if the yishkoim ba'oyalei shein. And that's what we have to realize as we're sitting in the middle of Chanukah. To only have the external, the materialism, the physical, and not use it la'avodah sabayri, not use it b'yishkoim ba'oyalei shein, then taka, it's something that's sheker, it's something that's hevel, it's something that can bring about the nun nefila. But if you use it, he tishalo, with someone who has yirah shamayim, if you use it for v'yishkan v'yalei shein, to take all of the beautiful gifts, the physical, the external, the materialism that the Rebbe Shem has given us, and use it, l'avodah sabayrei, to become a bigger Talmud Chacham, to develop a relationship with a fellow Yid, then that's something of beauty, because then you're not using it for the chitzainius, you're using it for the pnimius, you're using it for the neshama, you're using it for the soul, and that's who we are. Where do you see this concept in Parshas Miketz? There's a tremendous pshat brought down, again, from the Helig B'nai Yisoscha, Zuchus Yagan Aleinu. What were the three main things that the Yevonim were seeking to abolish in the days of the Chanukah miracle? Of course, we know it was Chodesh, a reference to Rosh Chodesh, Mila, and Shabbos. Why specifically those three? Why those three? The B'nai Yisoscha tells us fundamentally these three stand at the foundation of our Yiddishkeit. It is these three, Reish Chodesh, Milah, and Shabbos, that brings the Shekhinah to reside within us. And when the Shekhinah is with us, then we could exist. How do you see that by all three? Let's start with the obvious one. When it comes to Bris Milah, so a Yid, a male, has Bris Milah done to him, he now became a kli, a vessel, that the Shekhinah can reside within that person. You take a look, immediately after Avraham Avinu performed Bris Milah, you find that Hashem came to him. Why did Hashem come to Avraham Avinu immediately after Bris Milah? Because after performing Bris Milah, you're now a mukhain for the Shekhinah to reside with that person. Isn't that the same idea of Shabbos? We always say a Yid keeps Shabbos, but doesn't Shabbos keep us? Isn't Shabbos a time that it says about Shabbos, V'shamu b'nei Yisrael es Shabbos, l'dayreisam, literally it means for generations. But if you see, there's no vav. So Chazal say, don't read it l'dayreisam, read it l'dirasam. What's a dira? What's a dira? An apartment. When a person observes Shabbos, l'dirasam, it becomes a dwelling, a dira, that Hashem says, now I reside together with you on Shabbos Chodesh. And finally, the Ches, when it comes to Chodesh Rosh Chodesh. In fact, when we do Birchas HaChodesh, I'm sorry, when we do Kiddush Levana, and when we're outside, we say the words, Il Molei Leizochi Yisrael, El Lahakbil Pnei Avim Shabashamayim Kol Chodesh HaChodesh Dayam. How fortunate we are if we would only be privileged to greet the Shekhinah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, each and every month, that would be sufficient for us. Meaning to say, Kiddush Levana, Rosh Chodesh, is a time of Kabbalah Pnei Shekhinah. So the B'nai Yisrael tells us these three mitzvahs stand at the foundation of Yiddishkeit. For all three have the Sarah Shava, the commonality, we'll quickly repeat it in one sentence, Mila, Shabbos, and Chodesh. That what do all three accomplish? The Shekhinah is now able to reside with us. And if the Shekhinah could reside with us, we could exist. Yosef is the first one to go into Sheba Mitzrayim, into Golos. And he knows soon after, shortly, there's going to be many years of enslavement by his family. His family will have to endure many years of enslavement. He wants to do everything, Rabbi Yisai, to plant these three mitzvahs in Mitzrayim so that he can prepare his brothers and family throughout their funereal gullus there to make sure Hashem's presence will forever remain with them. And so he made sure, of course he wanted to make sure that physically they would be okay, but equally, if not more important, as we spoke at in last week's shiur, the spiritual danger. And therefore, Yosef HaTzadik made sure to emphasize, hear this clearly, the observance of those three mitzvahs, of Chodesh, of Milah, and Shabbos. Why did he do that? Because he knew that those three mitzvahs draw Hashem into your midst, and that's what's needed before the family arrives. Because Mitzrayim was so immoral and so debased, what a horrific society. He wanted to make sure to prepare them. Rabbi Yisai, listen to a beautiful thing that B'nai Yisoskar says. If you take a look at the Pasuk says, the Pasuk tells us in this week's Parsha Miketz, that after explaining to Paro his dreams, the 7 years of plenty followed by 7 years of famine, he then says you have to appoint a wise person to prepare the land. Now he meant prepare the land in an agricultural sense. What does the Pasuk say? I could already see the smile on your faces in the Heichal. I think I could even feel the smile on those who are listening now live. What does the Pasuk say? V'chimesh es Eretz Mitzrayim. We have to prepare the Eretz Mitzrayim, the Chimesh es Eretz Mitzrayim, for the upcoming famine. Now, of course, he meant outwardly, let's give it agricultural preparation. But he was also talking about the spiritual preparation. Rabbi said, how do you spell the word Chimesh? Ches, Mem, Shin. What does that stand for? Chodesh, Milah, Shabbos. when he says to Pharaoh, we have to prepare this land, the chimesh, we have to prepare it. He didn't merely mean physically and agriculturally. He meant we have to prepare it spiritual. Chimesh, says the Bnei Yisrael, chodesh, milah, and Shabbos, get it ready so that the Shechina could be here. That's the only way my family will stand a chance in the immoral society of Mitzrayim. And that brings us to Hanukkah. The Yevonim understood the success of these three mitzvahs. The Yevonim understood that when you have these mitzvahs, you have God with you, you have the Shechina with you, you have the presence residing amongst you. The Yevonim wanted to do everything in their power to swallow up Klal Yisrael once and for all and to distance us from Hashem. And therefore, they specifically attack Chodesh, Milah, and Shabbos, for those three are at the root of the Shechina residing with us. And there's nothing more that they were seeking to do than to distance us from the Shechina. And that's why they attack specifically those three. And how, to tie it to the beginning of the Shir, did they seek to do that? By having us dwell and stress only on the physical, the beauty, the gashmius, the external, as an end to itself, but not as a way to bring us closer to Hashem. And that brings us to the last part of the Shir, Parshas Vayigash, which, as I said, is next week, but the seventh and eighth day of Hanukkah this year, those 2 days, will fall in the week that we read Parshas Vayigash. So Vayigash is also very tied into Hanukkah. And you see, I believe, in Parshas Vayigash, the answer to what we can do in such a long and funereal galus, to keep the Shechina with us, to use the Chitzonius for purposes of Pnimius, to bring back the Chimesh, the Chodesh, Milah, and Shabbos, and by that I mean to bring Hashem back into our lives. I want to propose for the last part of the Shia one suggestion. I'm grateful to Rabbi Buchstein. It's found in his classic Sefer in the second volume. It's actually a pshat we mentioned about a year and a half ago, Pesach time. It is one of my absolute favorite pshatim. It's fascinating because in the beginning of the Shia we said a pshat from Reb Zevlev. And now as we start to conclude the Shia, it's another gem, an absolute gem. In his inimitable style that he says this pshat. I hope you enjoy this pshat as much as I do. Let's take a look very quickly at Parshas Vayigash. All of a sudden we know the famous Medrash. The Pasuk tells us that when Yaakov Avinu saw the agolos, the wagons that Yosef sent, but the chiruach Yaakov Avinu, his spirit was revived. Rashi tells us because agolos reminded him of Egla Rufa, the last sugya they had learned 20 years prior together. Let's analyze this concept. He was excited when he saw the wagons that Yosef sent. Number one, what excited Yaakov Avinu so much that his spirit became revived? The family was now going to move to Mitzrayim. Today, if you want to transport a family from New York to Miami, Miami to New York, you hire a moving company. This was a moving company. That's what the wagons were for. The wagons were the mode of transportation to get me from point A to point B. You sent the moving van. These are what they were. So what's so special about them that Yaakov said, ooh, there's a coded message within them? Why is there a coded message? This was to transport us. And question number two, maybe even more glaring, the wagons weren't sent or ordered by Yosef. They were ordered by Paro. If you take a look at the Psukim clearly, it's Paro who suggested sending the wagons. So what does Yaakov Avinu mean that his spirit became revived when he saw the wagons that Yosef sent? Yosef didn't initiate sending the wagons. They were initiated by the request of Paro. Two questions, incredible questions. What do you do with them? So Reb Zevlev gives us a fabulous explanation. Paro wanted Yaakov and his family in Mitzrayim immediately. He thinks to himself, if Yosef, who's the son, brought me such incredible wealth, could you imagine what the father's going to do? There was one thing on Paro's mind. Get Yaakov to Mitzrayim with his family as quickly as possible. If the son brought me such extraordinary wealth, you can only imagine the great positive effect and wealth that would be brought by having Yaakov in my land. So Paro had one thing that he wanted to serve his needs. Get the family here immediately. So what did he do? He sent a moving van. He sent a moving van in the form of Agolas. Yosef knew for his father that will never happen. For Yaakov Avinu to come to Mitzrayim, but to come and be presented with an opportunity where he has to now be in the Egyptian culture, buy a new home, buy new clothing, and live in a new neighborhood, and acclimate to the Egyptian culture, that's something that obviously Yaakov and his family would never ever do. I'm going to integrate in an easy way in the new culture? No. That's how the path to assimilation starts. Yosef knew it was a non-starter for his father. So you know what Yosef did? He sent a second set of wagons. He sent a second set of wagons. That second set was to bring, as we would say, the Alterheim. The first was sent by Paro. That was to bring and transport the people. It was the second set that Yosef ordered and that Yosef sent, and that was to bring, like we said a moment ago, the Alterheim. In other words, their personal belongings, to bring all that they had in their home that represents the lifestyle of a Yid, the clothing of a Yid, the personal belongings that they had, whatever it was in the home that we could transport to Mitzrayim to keep the feeling, the Mesaira of the Alterheim. The first step, sent by Paro to bring the people. Yosef knew for my father, it's never going to happen. He sent a second set of wagons to bring the Alterheim, to bring all of the personal belongings to transport their lifestyle, a continuity of the Mesaira. And that's the way he reads the Pasuk. When Yaakov Avinu saw the wagons that Yosef sent, not the wagons that Paro sent, but the second set. When he saw the second set that Yosef sent, it meant he knew that my son knows. In order for me to pick up and move to Mitzrayim, it'll only happen if I can bring the Mesaira, the personal belongings, the lifestyle, all that will keep me rooted to my Mesaira. When Yaakov saw that set, the one that Yosef sent, and he understood that Yosef was sending it to make sure that the family would be able to remain strong, but the Chiruach Yaakov Avihem, that revived his spirit. And you know, many times we say that when it says, but the Chiruach Yaakov Avihem, the father's spirit became revived, it could also be a reference to our father, Avinu Sheba Shemayim. When the Ribbono Shel Olam sees that in Golos, we're not looking to fit in and to acclimate. I will dress like them. I will talk like them. I will walk like them. I'll do everything like them. Chalila, that's living with only one set of wagons. The idea of being able to keep the Ribbono Shel Olam in our midst, to fulfill the mitzvah Chimesh, Chodesh, Mila, and Shabbos, is to always travel with the second set of wagons. I'd like to ask you a question as we conclude this year. Wherever you travel, your home here, do you live with the second set of wagons? Living with only the first set means I'm here. So what difference does it make how I look, what I wear, how I dress, what I listen to, where I go? What difference does it make? Simlevin, do we live with the second set of wagons? with the second set that's a constant reminder, we are in Golos. We end the share as we started. What a reminder that we are in Golos. Our job in Golos is to make sure that wherever we travel, it's with the second set of wagons, with our precious Messiah, with the Alter Heim, with all the things that make us proud, proud, proud to be a Yid, because we are different. And with the Chassam Sefer, where the Heilige Chassam Sefer says, Klal Yisrael is compared to Eish, as the Pasuk says, Beis Yaakov Eish. But the nations of the world compared to water, as it says, Mayim Rabim. So the Chassam Sefer asked the question, isn't water more powerful than fire? If you have a fire, how do you put it out? You put it out with water. So if we are Eish and they are Mayim, does that mean they're stronger than us and they can defeat us? Listen to what the Chassam Sefer answered. He said so beautifully, you're right. Water always takes care of the fire except one time. When you have a pot that's filled with water and you put the fire under the pot and you keep that fire burning brilliantly, what happens to the water? It evaporates. Why? Because there was a mechitza. There was a separation, the bottom of the pot, between the fire and the water. When there's no mechitza, when there's no second set of wagons, when we do everything just like them, when there's no vechimesh, unfortunately, Mayim Rabim could go ahead and defeat the Eish. Chalila Rachmana Litzlan. But when there is vechimesh, when we travel every day of our lives with that precious, priceless second set of wagons, when we do that, we're creating a mechitza. We do things differently, and we do it with pride. When there's the mechitza, the Eish is stronger than the Mayim. Let us be zeich as we continue to light the ner, the or of the menorah, that ner explode and erupt into the Eish of the Beis Yaakov Eish, that we are proud to do things and represent something so different. And in that chus, may that Eish not only allow us to see the lighting of the menorah in the third and everlasting Beis HaMikdash, but let us be zeicha to a lichtige Chanukah and to experience Oirei Shel Mashiach.